Gigit, sponsored by Shillaga Garden Centre in Glon and Plan Le Watt.
It is indeed Digit. I'm joined in the studio by Hester McDonald, who is here to talk this morning about our problem plants. Hester, are problem plants not just any plant that's not in the right place?
Do you know, that's a really good point. Yes, you are absolutely right. But I figured we have so many awesome listener questions so often, besides our absolute favourite, is it dead yet?
Yeah.
Is it dead question? We have questions that come up often about the same plants. And I thought this would be a good chance to kind of group them all together and tackle them one after another, because I know these plants are problematic. I know they cause people issues. So I thought we'd kind of deal with those.
So what plants are we going to talk about today?
So our most common listener questions are box, or Box sempervirens, if you want to give it its proper name, and more specifically, those wretched box tree caterpillars and the moths.
When we say box, we're talking hedges.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, exactly.
Just really break it down.
Exactly. Pine trees, pine processionary moths, roses and black spot if we get time. Pear and pear rust comes up a lot. Dying two-year hedges and hedges in general. Fruit trees that don't fruit.
We do get those questions.
We get
a
that
lot.
A lot. Mold on fruit and leaves in the veggie patch. Like, what to do about that? And citrus in general, if we have time. But I'm aware that we only have an hour and a bit, and that might not be enough time to do all of these things.
So let's start off with box hedges, as I think of them.
Yeah.
And these box tree moths.
Yeah, they're a right pest. So let's do the basics. So box, or Box sempervirens, to give it its real Latin name. It's a popular evergreen shrub, often used for hedging, as you say, or for clipping into neat shapes, or topiary, things like balls or triangles and things like that.
Dinosaurs.
Yeah, exactly. Dinosaurs. I saw a squirrel.
Oh, really?
I loved him. Yeah, I love the squirrel.
That's excellent.
So it was previously super popular for formal gardens, and you see them used right across Europe in the big formal gardens like Hetlow and Versailles and things like that. They all use it because it's quite robust. It doesn't mind heat, it doesn't mind cold, and it clips really nicely.
Well, so, it sounds wonderful and not problematic at all.
Yeah. However, so if you are new to the region, or you're new to gardening, or new to listening to this show, you might not know that prior to this, box trees didn't really have any major predators until in this region, about 2010, they arrived, box tree caterpillars, or more precisely moths, box tree moths, because they're actually the ones that can fly, the caterpillars can't. And they've established themselves a real pest. So the caterpillars themselves are sort of, they mostly only eat box, but there are some reports from the UK, unsubstantiated, but they are reports of them nibbling other things as well, snacking on other things,
which is snack.
Problematic. Mm. So the caterpillars, they're green and black. They're not very big, but the first, you know, section of my index finger, I describe them as very well camouflaged within box, and they wrap themselves up in leaves with their own webbing, and they usually feed from the inside to the outside of the plant, so you won't see them until sometimes it's way too late, and they are voracious feeders. They will strip a box plant in a weekend, no problem, and you won't know.
So we're not talking about, oh, they have a little nibble and some of your leaves will be damaged. Mm-mm. We're talking about the
stripping.
Whole plant will be twigs.
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh.
Which is really problematic. And the moths themselves are very unremarkable, about the size maybe of my thumbnail, I'd say. Greyish white in colour, very innocuous. But they can fly quite long distances, it turns out. And so they do spread.
What months are we talking about being particularly dangerous?
Anytime now from May to October, unfortunately. And last year they recorded 4 life cycles of the wretched little things.
Oh, yikes. So what happens when the plant gets attacked? How do we spot it?
So once the leaves get eaten, they get in quite quickly as well. That's not really a problem in itself, because box is evergreen and it can regrow leaves, of course. However, what happens is if it's attacked multiple times, so if there's 4 life cycles and each time the poor plant goes, okay, right, I'm going to make some new leaves, then it's never going to have enough resources in order to withstand another attack, or then get another problem like box blight or something like that, or a fungal issue that or is under drought stress. That's when it then just turns its toes up and says, do you know what, it's a bit much, and
so it's not just going to make your plants a little uglier, it's going to
potentially kill your plants. Yeah. What can you do if you spot it?
So I'd say good plant cultural practices are the very first thing. So feed your plants so they're more resistant to any kind of attack, not just from box leaf caterpillars, but also from things like box blight. So give it a good compost, mulch it properly, keep a close eye on. That means actually looking at them weekly, right inside. Like really get your hands in and have a proper look. So this will help your plants regrow, but it also help if you check regularly and you're going to not miss them. So what you need to do, if you find the wretched little caterpillars, hand pick them.
Just pick them off one by one.
Just pick them off and either squish them, gross, throw them onto the lawn. Birds love them if they can spot them. They do eat them. Or drown them. It's really disgusting.
This is where we need a very good pair of gardening gloves.
You need a very good pair of gardening gloves because it's really disgusting and they're also usually covered in poop.
I feel like I'd need to put them onto a bird feeder table.
They would be like, oh, thank you, Kat. This is the best thing ever. Yum, yum, yum.
Just at least to go into the natural cycle
of things.
Yeah,
they'd be delighted. Pheromone traps work really, really well. So pheromone traps, and this is common for lots and lots of other different sorts of bugs that you might want to catch. So they've either got female pheromones or they've got male pheromones and attract the other gender of the moth to it. Mm. And then they stick and they can't go out and make more caterpillars, which is good.
Not so useful for feeding them to the birds then afterwards.
No, not so useful. No. And that's only suitable for the moths. I'd say making a bug-friendly garden. So, you know, things like insect hotels, but log piles, because actually lots of things will predate on them. Wasps, there are also microscopic wasps that eat them. Spiders and ants will all eat them if they can get to them. And if you have enough of them in your garden. So a kind of eco-balanced garden will help you to get rid of this new pest, which is very helpful.
Almost seems counterintuitive to say, how do I get rid of these insects that I don't want?
Get more insects.
It does make sense.
It does make sense. Things like blue tits, birds like blue tits, have started predating on them if they can get them. In fact, that's how I knew I had box leaf caterpillars in one of my box plants, was because there were a load of blue tits sitting on it fighting with each other to get to the caterpillars. Aha, I thought. So putting up nest boxes around your garden will really help, particularly for small birds like blue tits, who'll be delighted that you're not only providing bed but also board, which is delightful.
Delicious.
Yeah, exactly. You can take the box out and plant something else. If your box is really suffering, there are lots of other good alternatives that you could put in instead, or you can spray, and the sprays are quite effective. There's a bacillus, which is a little microscopic animal that hunts and kills just the caterpillars and isn't toxic to anything else, but you do need to wear gloves because it's a live thing that you're spraying on. And there are some pyrethrin based, which are pretty nasty, which are effective, but you just need to be really careful. They're not great.
Ultimately worth noting that these box caterpillars, they are not actually harmful to people.
No, they're not. They're just annoying. That's it.
And will kill your plants.
Yeah.
All right. Coming up very shortly, we'll be talking about pine trees. That is coming up next. And just a little reminder that if you want to hear any of this again, we will put it up later as a podcast on worldradio.ch/digit. If you would like to get a little recap of anything, or if you've missed any of the details, just look on our website a little bit later on today.
Dig It, sponsored by Shilliger Garden Centre in Glan and Plan-les-Ouates. Shilliger, let your inspiration grow.
Talking pesky moths and caterpillars and all sorts. Really, we were talking problem plants. It turns out that the plants aren't so problematic. It's more the things that like to live in them.
Do you know, that's a very good point. You're right. Poor plants.
Poor plants. We've been talking about all those caterpillars that live in box and hedges, essentially, and very lovely topiaried dinosaurs, as I like to imagine.
Or squirrels.
Yeah. Yeah, I've seen some good ones. But let's talk about pine tree processionary moths and caterpillars. They also wreak a little havoc.
They do. And they're sort of the opposites of box tree moths and caterpillars. So we were talking about box earlier, and in that they're not really harmful. Box tree caterpillars are not a problem to people. They're just annoying for your plants. However, but pine tree processionary caterpillars are a real menace, and they can be a danger to people and to pets because of their hairs. So The moths themselves aren't a problem. Described in many of the books as a drab greyish brown, tiny, like smaller than my thumbnail, tiny. And they're really short-lived, at most 3 days, and they're nocturnal. You're probably never going to see one. What you are likely to see are the little hairy caterpillars. They travel in single file. They specifically touch each other so that they know that the other one's there in front.
Is that how you notice that they're different to other caterpillars?
Yeah, they
is
touch each other. You often, there are quite them. A few things that travel in single file, but these ones touch each other very specifically. So it looks like almost a single animal. They're very bizarre. They're sort of orangey brown in colour with grey stripe bands, and they're very hairy. And the hairs are highly, highly allergenic and can actually cause anaphylactic shock. If dogs or cats sniff them or lick them, they can get necrosis of the tongue or of the nose. It's really nasty. Oh. So you should steer really well clear of them. And they form these really distinctive webbed nests over the winter, anytime from sort of October, November, you like to see them. Up in pine trees, and it looks like someone's just thrown a load of Halloween cobweb up there and left it.
Got it.
And you probably, during the winter when it's very cold, you won't see them coming out to feed. They come out at night a lot, and as soon as there's a warmer day, you'll see them travelling in single file down the pine tree and off in search of things to eat. And they eat pine needles.
So number one, don't touch them.
Don't touch them. Don't go near them. If you've seen them at the bottom of a tree, definitely don't lie down at the foot of the tree.
Is this a job for a professional?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Don't do it yourself. So when if you get a professional in to get the nest removed, usually your commune will have a list of people that are suitable to do it. Sometimes the fire service do it, which I quite like. And when they come fully boots, gloves, masks, hair coverings. That's how bad the hairs are. They're really awful.
Just shy of a hazmat suit,
essentially. Pretty much. So if you have a nest and you want to get rid of it, which I would say is a great choice, you may also decide you don't want to take it down because maybe it's too high up in a tree or it's awkward, or if you take that branch off the tree it's going to look awful. You do have another choice, which is to restrict the movement of the caterpillars, and they're called ring traps. And so basically it's a collar, it's a plastic collar that fits onto the trunk of your tree, usually about 2 meters up from the ground, so you will need a ladder or a tall person to do it. And often some of the kits come with a sort of glue, a biodegradable glue that helps the collar fit really tightly round the tree, and it's got a lip on the collar so that when the caterpillars go dum-de-dum-de-dum, we're going down the tree now, they get caught on this lip, and then there's a tube which goes into a bag, and the bag is a one-way valve in it so they can't climb out again. So
I think I've seen little bags on trees. I think that's what they're for. That's what this is doing.
So initially they were clear, but people were distressed by the sight of dying caterpillars, and it is disgusting if you've got a lot. Now you can have them so they match the bark of the tree.
Oh, camouflaged in.
So you can't see it. And so basically the end of the winter with, you know, gloves and a mask, you then take the whole lot off and you put it in a bin bag and throw it away.
Given that moths fly, and do they not just turn into moths and disappear off somewhere else and probably stay in your garden somewhere else?
Not if they're in a bag.
No,
they can't. They can't moth at that point.
Yeah.
So what you can also do is to restrict the population. You can use pheromone traps, and they're really quite effective. They're yellow and they're sticky, and the moths or those plastic green ones you can get as well, like a light, and the moths fly into them and drown or get stuck to the sticky paper on the inside and can't come out. So that reduces the number of eggs that are laid. So you're less likely to get box tree caterpillar nests, pine processionary moth nests the following year. But, you know, given that they can fly, it'll just help.
Okay. It sounds honestly quite grim if you've got either of these issues. Let's move on and look at something that isn't necessarily to do with a caterpillar. We often get questions about roses.
We do.
And one of the most common is about black spots on the leaves. What are they? Can you do anything about them?
So this is, as you say, this is probably the most common question we get, I reckon, black spot. And it's super common in this region. So it's a fungus which makes these small black patches on the leaves. And they might either stay small if the plant is doing a good job of fighting it off, or sometimes they enlarge to cover most of the leaf, or you may notice the leaves again going yellow and dropping off. And so you can, in a badly attacked plant, the plant can have no leaves on it by September, which is, you know, not great. However, many modern varieties are resistant to black spots. So if you're looking for a new rose, then I'd say go for one of those that says mm-hmm. disease resistant on it. If you've already got the roses, then I'd say some basic cultural management practices will really help. So anytime a leaf falls off, pick it up. Don't put it in the compost, bin it or burn it.
Wow.
Get rid of it.
Because
the fungus will happily overwinter in your compost heap and hop, reinfect the roses as soon as bud break the following year. I would also prune it to make sure you've got good air circulation. And I would say feed it in spring with a good layer of mulch or compost because a healthy plant will find it easier to resist any attacks from anything, whether it's bugs or diseases or anything else. I would avoid wetting the leaves when you water because it's spread by water splash. The fungus moves within water droplets. And if it's really bad, then there are some fungicides that are allowed under organic management or any other management that you can use. Go and ask at a garden centre. Bring them a leaf and go, look, I've got this on my roses. Please fix this for me.
Bring it in a clear plastic bag.
They don't
love it when you walk into the garden centres.
They don't. No, they don't.
With something that risks killing their entire stock or
exactly.
at least.
They don't love that.
Yeah,
no.
Not so much. Okay, we're going to come on to other plants that we hear a lot of questions about. If you've got a question for Hester, you can send it in studio@worldradio.ch.
Dig It, sponsored by Shilliger Garden Centre in Glan and Plan-les-Ouates. Shilliger, let your inspiration grow.
And we do have a lovely prize from Shilliger Garden Centre that we're giving away on the show today. They are going to gift to you a poinsettia from their own production, so one that has been grown there, and also a bottle of Urban Jungle, which I believe is a very fancy and very lovely plant food.
It is, and that will help keep your poinsettia in tip-top form well into the new year.
That's what we're looking for, because we're talking problem plants today. Anyway, if you would like to get into that draw, just send us in a plant that's not a plant picture or anything, but just tell us about a plant that's doing particularly well that you have. So one that's thriving at the moment. All of this talk of problem plants, I just want to hear about some that are doing particularly well. I've got an abundance of spider plants.
You've got spider babies.
Honestly. But the spider plants have made very healthy other plants that are now making spider babies.
Might I have some of your spider babies?
Yes. How many do you want?
About 20 would be great.
Great. Fantastic. I'll organise it. I've got some that are in pots. I've got some that are the babies that have been taken off that are sat in water. They're currently propagating. You let me know. I am spider queen, apparently. Or spider plant.
Spider
babies. So that would be mine. Let me know, though, if you've got a plant that's doing particularly well, because, we're talking about all these problems all the time, and I don't want to put people off gardening. It would be a terrible thing.
No, I've got an aloe that has ideas well above its station and also keeps making babies.
Cannot do aloe. I think I'm watering it too much.
I think you're being too generous.
Yeah,
I agree. Just leave it in a corner, ignore it. Stick it outside in the summer, it'll be fine.
Okay, I'll do that. Fine.
I'll swap you some aloe babies for some spider babies.
That's how we'll go about this. It's the best way, I think. Let's talk about some other problem plants, though. We're looking at pears. You get quite a lot of questions about pears.
We do, and they're oddly quite fiddly. I love pear trees. I think I love their bark, and I think the blossom in spring is beautiful, and I really like the shape of the leaves. But in this region, they get pear rust quite badly. So pear rust, yes, of course, it's another fungus like rose black spots. And it's an odd one in that it has what's called an alternate host, which is another plant that it likes, that it jumps off to spend the winter and then jumps back onto pears. And its alternate host is juniper. And there's a lot of juniper around here. It's a very popular plant, either as a hedge or it can be used as ground cover. It can be used lots of different things. And that does cause issues in that the spores, the things that spread the fungus, can travel quite a long way, a couple of kilometres. And even if you've got rid of all the juniper in your own garden, it's not worth doing it unless the neighbours have all done it as well, unfortunately. So that is a bit of a problem. So So it's frustrating, and it's really distinctive. It's really bizarre looking. It causes these big orange blotches on the upper side of the leaves, and underneath these weird, like finger-like brown lumpy excrescences, which is the back side of it. And actually, that's the bit that opens and the spores all come out of. It's quite cool if you like fungi.
If that's what you're into.
If that's what you like. So I would say good cultural practices, good pruning every year to allow lots of air circulation. Pick up the leaves. There's no point picking them off the plant because your whole plant will be covered and then you won't have any leaves on your plant if you pick them all off. Just assume it's going to happen. On the whole, it doesn't damage the pears though themselves. The only thing it might do is if it's very, very badly affected, it won't photosynthesize as effectively and won't be as healthy. So feed it. Feed it and water it. Look after your plant and it will fight it off better.
We need to get on to some listener questions. Otherwise, I fear we will not have time. So I'm going to dive in and get this, jump onto this listener question that we've got in. It's anonymous, but I'm going to just take you through this question. We've been looking at problems in the garden dealing with trees and hedges, but what about problems with our veggie patch specifically? What could we expect?
So at this time of the year, I would say that you're going to have problems with mold this time of the year, stuff getting really soggy and disgusting. And we also quite often have a lot of questions about pollination and fruit trees. Which one would you like to do first? Your choice.
Fruit trees.
Fruit trees. So I would say probably half our questions about fruit and fruit trees is about ones that aren't setting fruit.
Yeah, they're not.
They're just not fruiting. So on the whole, it's quite easy to figure it out, but you just need to ask yourself a whole bunch of questions. The first one is, does your fruit tree require a pollination partner? Now, lots and lots of apples, some pears and a lot of cherries need another tree to provide other pollen in order to make the fruit get created. And it could be this, it's usually one that flowers at the same time. And it could be that your tree had its pollination partner next door or three doors away. And
they've cut it down.
And they've cut it down and you don't know. So it might be that you need to plant a new tree in order to provide a pollination partner. If you don't know what it is and you have photos or you have pictures, take it to one of the specialists. There's a lot, if it's an apple tree, there's loads of apple days going on locally at the moment. And if not, take it to one of the specialists, a very good one in Vic or Europlant, who are fruit specialists. Or take it to a garden centre, go to Chillingham and say, I don't know what this is. Can you help me? And they might be able to help you identify. That'd be really useful. Was there any insect activity when your flowers were open? Now, if it was freezing cold or very windy or very wet, could be that there just weren't enough bees around. Bees or other pollinating insects around at the time that weren't active. They were all cozy at home going, well, I'm not going to go and do that work. That's disgusting right now. So it might be just there was no insect activity, in which case, never mind. It will probably work next year. And if you want to help, put in lots of pollen-friendly plants into your garden so that you'll already be on the bees map and it won't just be that one little tree that needs to be pollinated. That's another thing. Is your plant something called alternate bearing? It's a great term. Basically means it has a really heavy year and then a negligible year.
Ah.
And it
goes back and forward.
Yeah, it does. It's more common than you might think. In which case, if it is alternate bearing, it needs to be pruned slightly differently, as in you're going to be accidentally cutting off the fruit bearing spurs if you cut it every year. That might be the issue. If so, don't worry. Then it'll have flower, it'll have fruit next year. And it might be that your plant had a huge crop last year and it's just saving itself this year, and it's not producing, it's having a little bit of rest. Have you pruned it at the wrong time? Have you accidentally cut off all of next year's flowers? That does sometimes happen.
Ah.
Yeah. And is the plant healthy overall? If it's not healthy, it won't be able to make enough flowers and it won't be able to do fruit set. And how old is it? If it's not old enough, some plants it takes 10 to 12 years to them to fruit. It might just not be old enough in order to set fruit. Sorry.
Okay. Well, in
which
that case,
wait.
Wait a bit longer, simply.
Yeah. Absolutely.
We'll get on to more of your questions, but it is 9:30. I've got to get on to the Swiss news right now. We'll come back to Hester after this.
Dig It, sponsored by Schilliger Garden Centre in Glan and Plan-les-Ouates. Schilliger, let your inspiration grow.
Courtesy of Schilliger, we have a lovely big bottle of Urban Jungle, which is a plant food, to give away today with a poinsettia grown by Schilliger themselves. So if you would like to win both of those things, all you need to do is tell me about a plant that is thriving, that is doing particularly well right now. Just name that plant. Just tell me what it is that you are doing very well at growing. Like Isabel says, my Christmas cactus plants are beginning to flower.
So exciting. I love that moment.
How good's that? That's pretty good timing. Also, we've got a couple of messages that have come in. And hang on a minute. We've got a photo. I love a good photo. A photo of someone's plant that says, I don't know what this is, but it's doing very well. It's this light green plant.
Oh, yes. It's a Chilean potato vine.
Dorothy.
They are gorgeous. It's mad. Look at the size of that thing.
It's enormous. So is it doing particularly well?
It is doing particularly well. What have you been feeding it? Well done.
Nice one. Keep them coming in. Just send us a little message telling us what of your plants are or which of your plants are doing particularly well, because today we're talking about problem plants. I don't want it to all be about the disasters right now. But
To be fair, some of them are problem pests. Yeah. It's not the plants' fault.
Yeah, it's true. Bless them. We've got to protect them and feed them up so that they are stronger to fight infection. Hence the prize, really. 939 on the text. If you want to go into that draw, just start your text off with WRS or email studio@worldradio.ch. I got some more questions. We're going to get through them.
Right.
Hester, we've got Colin who said, how do I deal with my enormous Agapanthus plant? I was gifted it by a neighbour who left on a mission and I don't want to kill it by accident.
Oh, well, that's a great thing not to kill it by accident. So Agapanthus, also known as African lilies, super popular, grown for their bright blue, purple or sometimes white flowers and their attractive bright, strap-like, bright green leaves. Their most forms are hardy and they'd be okay down outside, down about -5 if you've got well-drained soil, which I do not have. If you don't know if it's a hardy, as in is it going to live if you live it outside, I would say err on the side of caution. So don't leave it outside all winter. If you can pick it up, it depends how enormous it is. If you can pick it up and it's in a pot, bring the pot into a cool, light garage or veranda if you can. If not, wrap the pot in bubble wrap and get it off the floor, and then wrap the plant in one of the breathable materials that are widely sold in all good garden centres to help you overwinter your plant. Lift the pot off the ground, because what might happen is that the pot, if it's very wet, the pot will freeze to the ground and then the frost will work its way up and kill your plant, which is not great.
Good luck.
Send us some pictures in the spring.
Christine says, I had some nice strawberries left on my plant. Now they're all mouldy. Is there anything I can do?
Oh, no. That is very disappointing. So after all this cool, wet weather, I'm not super surprised that a few things are going mouldy now. Just pick off the mouldy ones, bin them. Maybe don't put them in the compost heap. And any leaves that have gone mouldy as well. The rest of the plant will be absolutely fine over winter. You don't need to do anything else to it. However, if you do still have some fruit, you could give it a go to ripen them indoors. So pick them now. And put them indoors in a paper bag with a banana. And the banana will give off some ethylene, which is the gas it gives off as it ripens. And the gas ripens other fruit, which is why they say don't put bananas with other fruit, because they will over-ripen the other fruit quickly.
But they will stop something from becoming mouldy. I thought they would encourage it to get mouldy.
No, they should help just to ripen it so that they don't taste like turnips.
Thank
which
you.
They probably will if you're eating them with unripe strawberries and not delicious.
Shouldn't taste like turnips.
No.
Also another question, what about mould on leaves? I've got mould on various things in my veggie patch.
Yeah, so I would say it's quite common on some plants, particularly courgettes, and if you've got anything outside, some pumpkins maybe still be outside, I would say you've probably got quite a lot of powdery mildew on the leaves in the veggie patch. It's fairly common. I would say just leave them be at this stage. When you've picked the fruit, just pick the whole lot up and chuck it. There's no need for them. They will
compost
in the compost. I would say look for a disease resistant plant if you can get one when you buy your plants in May, or you're putting them in from seed in February. Do that. And water them regularly, because it's partially drought and irregular watering that causes it. But honestly, if you've still got leaves on at this stage of the year, it's nothing to do with what you did or what the weather did at any stage. It's just the way it is right now.
I think it's very timely, just to show that we're obviously doing the show in November, but problem plants. A question about overwintering again, and this is particularly for citrus. The question is, what's the best approach?
So they don't like freezing temperatures. They do not come from a region where freezing temperatures or cold winds are a thing in winter.
Not native.
They also don't like being the same temperatures humans enjoy over the winter, which leaves us with an awkward dilemma. Like, if they don't want to be indoors and they don't want to be outdoors, where do you put them? So the ideal is a light frost-free space, like a garage with a window, like I have, which is just amazing. But they are pretty unusual. You can also find a professional to look after it. Many garden centres and professional growers offer overwintering, and you can just ring them and they'll come and get it for you. Spray your plants so it's not accidentally infecting everything else with spider mites or something like that. And then they'll bring it back to you in April or May, which is pretty amazing. If you have a cool, if you can change the temperature within your house or your apartment, and you can make one room cool, put it in there, get it off the floor, because they hate underfloor heating. So lift it off the floor as much as you can and water it very sparingly over the winter. And if not, you could probably try, particularly if you're in town, try wrapping the pot in bubble wrap, getting it off the floor and put it on the most sheltered spot in your balcony or terrace and hope for the best. So wrap the pot in bubble wrap, wrap the plant in a breathable material, get it off the floor, and you might be all right. You know, it's not that cold.
Race through some of your questions. We've got a lot of material to get through. If we haven't managed to cover your question, I am sorry, but Hester will hopefully get back to you. And if you've got any questions generally for Hester and your about your plants, you can email them in studio@worldradio.ch. I'll throw ahead to the next show that we do, which is actually going to be in December now. I know that it's a way away, but I know that we'll be giving away a Christmas tree at the beginning of December.
Yay!
So stay tuned, listen out for when we will be doing that. I can't give you the date yet, but stay tuned for that one, because I do know that we've got a Christmas tree to give away, courtesy of Shilliger Garden Centre. Thank you to them. But today we are giving away this urban jungle plant food and a poinsettia. Once again, if you want to get into the draw, I'll leave this draw open for another 10 minutes. Just share with us a plant that's doing particularly well after we've been talking about problem plants all morning for Dig It. If you want to find this podcast again, head to worldradio.ch/Dig It. Thanks, Hester.
Thank you.
Dig It, sponsored by Shilliger Garden Centre in Glan and Plan-les-Ouates. Shilliger, let your inspiration grow.